Welcome to Healthcare Du Jour, where we dish up and digest the latest in healthcare. For the next 30 minutes, sit back as we bring you insight, commentary, and discussion on trending topics to the table, all expertly served up by our host and his guests. Healthcare Du Jour is brought to you by Carium, the telehealth platform enabling healthcare's digital transformation, helping you care for people within the fabric of their daily lives. Now here's your host, Matt Fisher.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining as we dive into the hottest topics in healthcare. I'm your host, Matt Fisher. On the menu today is Dr. Imad Rizik, President and Chief Executive Officer of Protiviti. Imad, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Matt.
So what I always like to do before getting into the main part of my discussion is to give my guests a little bit more of a chance to give an introduction in terms of who they are and what they do. So Imad, the floor is yours.
Yeah, well, thank you very much again, and thank you for having me. As you said, my name is Imad Rizik. I'm the CEO and Chairman of the Board of Protiviti. I always like to think about Protiviti as a very large analytical technology company that really is solving healthcare issues for the healthcare industry, mostly focused on payment, risk adjustment, value-based care, and quality. And we'll discuss that obviously a little bit later as we could dive deeper into value-based care.
So another kind of background question I'm always interested in is, what first brought you into the healthcare industry?
Well, it's very interesting. The healthcare industry, unlike other industries, obviously has, I would say, a combination of complexity and passion, for lack of a better term. It's a very complex, every industry is complex, Matt. So it's, you know, you don't want to say one industry is a lot more, but there's one variable that exists in healthcare, which is the patient. That patient's a variable that's not like a bank or like a manufacturer or a Ouija board. So there's a complexity that exists within that. And also in healthcare, you have to really want to help. You want to be able to take healthcare to the next level, because every time you innovate and every time you improve on healthcare, you're actually helping people and you're helping them have better lives.
So kind of with that background, how did that end up with you going in the direction of focusing on the value-based care and the risk adjustment and all those other areas that you just mentioned Protiviti focuses on?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's a question that probably could be asked for over 30 to 40 years, frankly, on. And it has a lot to do with data and it has a lot to do with payment. So because of the fact that we have these segments in healthcare, so if you think of the very large segments in healthcare, you have the providers that extend care. You have the payers that basically manage the risk and the administrative side of that care. And then you have the life sciences, which are pharmaceutical companies that add, you know, new interventions, whether they're pharmaceutical or devices. So you have these three large segments in there. And then the biggest part of it is really payment. And it's a very big part of our entire GDP. It's actually one of the largest. It's about 20% of our entire GDP is healthcare. So how we pay changes in so many different ways, depending on the service, depending on where the service is, depending on the patient, depending on the provider of care. And there are just that many complexities that exist in healthcare.
So you're kind of thinking about it, that complexity. I think most people would be familiar that I'm going to just call it the traditional model, since that's, you know, is the one that's been around the longest at this point in time, was fee for service.
Correct.
And now, you know, you're talking about value-based care. So maybe just to help frame up some of the conversation, you know, what are some of the new complexities that get introduced by going from fee for service to value-based care?
It's a great question. And it's a question that has been facing us in healthcare for a very long time. I think maybe it's a good idea to just take a trip down memory lane a little bit, and I'll try to make it very quick. But when you look at healthcare, it started out years and years ago with fee for service. That means you're exactly paying a fee for a specific service, and that changes depending on the contracting arrangement you have between the government or the payer and the provider. And then about in the 1980s, you remember we had this new emergence of HMOs. Remember those? And, you know, and where everybody became more capitated. And the goal for HMOs at that point was to begin to improve healthcare and make sure that you're paying for better quality. But what happened with HMOs, it was much more focused on payment and it was less focused on quality outcomes or risk. We are right now at a point where we have to figure out the interdependency between the patient's risk burden, how much risk they have, how much disease burden they have, and then how are you managing that risk for that individual or that population, and then how do you pay appropriately for that service with that quality? Those three have been separated for the last 30 to 40 years, Matt. And that is right now, that's why I say it is data and it is interoperability and it is interdependence between those three things that create value-based care. But right now, we now are smart enough to understand you and I have different risk burdens. We manage, you know, we have different diseases. And so we have different complexities. And so based on that, each person has to be actually evaluated on that risk burden, make sure you're managing it very well, and then you're paying appropriately.
So kind of given those factors that you were just identifying of figuring out the risk, determining each person's kind of risk burden, and then kind of and then trying to calculate what to pay for it, how is data beginning to inform that process of understanding to appropriately, I don't know if categorize is the right word, but you know, appropriately reach a determination for each of those categories.
Every single, let's focus on these three pillars, payment, risk, and quality. And then basically the combination of those creates what we would consider value-based care. So just to keep it not overly complex, because we could probably spend 27 minutes or 30 minutes around each single one. So risk is very important. Risk means you need a comprehensive view that's a longitudinal view of a patient. So that is how we, that is how I define risk, where you have the technology ability to be able to gather data that is both clinical and financial and social determinants of care, combine all of those to come up with a very good view of what that risk is, that risk burden. That requires a lot of technology and a lot of interoperability. That is one of the most important pieces that does not exist in healthcare right now. We do not have a single longitudinal, single patient identifier. That does not exist. The technology can exist. In financial services, you have a credit card. That credit card is tied to you, correct? Not to anyone else. It's only you. You go to an ATM, it knows who you are. That does not exist in healthcare. We do not have a single patient identifier across the country. So if you go to California, then you go to New York, and then you go to Florida because you're vacationing there, and somewhere in Florida, somehow, God forbid, you get an ankle sprain, they don't have your record. It exists where you live. And so that risk is not a portable risk, and it's not a comprehensive risk. The second part is also quality. Once you identify that risk, how do you measure quality? Let's just take an example to keep it simple, a diabetic. You know, how do we manage quality? We want to manage hemoglobin A1C below 5. We want to manage heart failure. We want to manage various kidney diseases. Each one of those, we have to have specific outcomes and then technology again to measure them. So then you have these two equations. How do you get all the risk so we understand your retrospective, that means your past 3 to 4 to 5 years of risk, and your prospective risk, which is a predictive modeling, what the quality measurement should be. And then based on that, you pay the appropriate payment.
And I suspect when you get to that last step of paying the appropriate payment, there is going to be a different viewpoint of what that appropriate payment actually is, based on where you fall within the sphere of the industry.
Yes. And that's where I think your viewership, if they're on the provider side, I would recommend to them a few very practical strategies around what that is. One of them would be that in their region, before they take on any risk, they should work with their payers. They should work with the payers in their region and ask for retrospective data. So say, I would like to see EMOD's data for the last 2 years. That's the first thing they should really do, because then you have a good appropriation, a good understanding of that risk. Second is make sure that you agree with the payer in your region also on what the quality metrics are and what the payment is upfront and what's an ongoing measurement between the two.
So it kind of, that's an interesting point that you just raised of, you know, seeking that collaboration between what have historically been opposing forces within the industry. So have you seen any effective or more, some strategies that are more effective than others in terms of encouraging the collaboration?
Yeah. Well, we it has happened around some diseases, some chronic conditions, and it's also happened in the Medicare population more readily than the commercial population. But the complexity is not just there, Matt. I mean, there's, for a provider, they also have to make sure that as a health system or as a health system and physician or an orthopod or other subspecialties, that they're also integrated, that they're also collecting data, because what you're seeing is not a connection between just the payer and the provider. But even within the providers, they're not very connected.
Yeah, and when you're talking about the collection of data, are there particular data sets that are more important than others?
Yeah. I mean, I would probably think that just full data. I mean, every time you interact with the healthcare industry, there should be an update of your health status and also demographics. Your demographics, you know, are changing. Where you live, what procedures have you had? As an example, if I took my mom from one of the hospital systems here to an orthopedic that needed to do some work on her, he was also within the same system. So they were all under that same umbrella of system, but the two hospital systems did not share data. So if she did not have me, I was basically her medical doctor. I had to supply all the retrospective information and all of that, where they're still under the same system. They do not share information. So he does a surgical procedure, and that surgical procedure does not update her. So when she came back being taken care of in the system down here in this zip code, they had no idea she had surgery.
Yeah, no, and unfortunately, I don't think that's an all too uncommon scenario. It's, you know, even in my area, I know that there's at least one system where the hospital will have one system, you know, one electronic system, and their affiliated physician group could be on something else. Correct. And it makes it even difficult within the, you know, the same ostensible closely knit system for them to be able to communicate easily without imposing, you know, burdens on the care teams.
And that has to be a priority for any health system, which it is, but it's, and right now we're lucky because there's technology out there. There's better technology. You know, when we went through over the past decade or so, that first step in technology was the electronic medical record. Okay, but that's still a small step. That's not a big step. The electronic medical records that are out there right now are not interoperable. You don't have one company communicating with another company and communicating with another company. So when you have a large health system, and that large health system has got 10 hospitals in it and 250 physicians or 300 physicians or 1,000 physicians, and you have 3 to 4 different electronic medical records that don't have interoperability around you. And the way that I would always, you know, tell folks in the provider world, put the patient in the center. Make sure that the patient is in the center and everything else, the provider, the services, whether it's lab, radiology, everything has to come with that patient being in the center.
Yeah, and kind of going back to your comparison to, you know, a credit card or, you know, kind of the financial industry more largely, it's, you know, as you said, it is so easy between, you know, organizations to get information to flow. I mean, like, I know earlier today I connected one bank account to an account at a completely different bank, and all it took was, you know, 2 clicks of a button and everything was all set in motion in the background. Right. You know, I think as you're saying that, we're not quite there yet in healthcare, despite, you know, the need for it and, you know, I think the appetite for it to occur.
So where the passion that I have around where we are currently in healthcare is the technology is there across all the other industries. We know the technology is there. We know the technology is being leveraged. We know the technology is being used and it's creating a significant improvement in just not cost, but also experience, service, quality across the board. Why can't healthcare do that? We could do that in healthcare. We're about 5 to 10 years behind. The electronic medical record enough on its own is not enough. We need to be able to connect and interoperate better.
Yeah, and I'm going to ask you, how do you think we can get to that next stage? But first, for those of you just joining, I'm talking with Dr. Imad Rizik from Cotiviti, and we've been talking value-based care and, you know, kind of right before been talking about interoperability and the technology existing and being ready to go, you know, because Dr. Rizik, as you were saying, you know, it's there in other industries and we even have it in place for healthcare, but, you know, how do we get to that next step that you were just talking about of actually leveraging the capabilities that have been put into place that are hopefully ready to go?
Well, it's a great question. And I think I will be very provocative right now and say that for the longest time, we've waited for the government to mandate. So we've wanted the government to say, we mandate certain things. I think we are at a point right now that the technology will allow us to do it without mandating. I think that as healthcare leaders, we need to become more educated on what is out there in technology and beginning to leverage technology of other industries in our industry. We have to be able to do that.
So in terms of, you know, waiting for that government mandate, you know, you were referencing, we all have, you know, there's the EHRs are everywhere, which was, are, you know, mostly the result of a government mandate. I think I tend to agree with you that the capabilities are there and a mandate isn't needed. But do you think that there is some desire for a mandate so that there's, you know, a common approach that's adopted? Or alternatively, do you think there is the ability for the industry to come together and essentially develop its own common approach that can benefit everybody without having to wait for a static government requirement?
Yeah, so we've been waiting for the government to mandate this for over a decade. And I've spoken to various bodies about this and we've discussed it and we've gone back and forth. What's going to actually drive it is market dynamics. And the market dynamics and the financial outcomes and the service and the quality is going to drive. And potentially also consumerism. You might begin to see there's an emergence of consumerism in healthcare. There's an emergence of financial risk burden that the providers are going to have. So if you have a provider health system, Matt, and they want to take on risk for a specific population, it's going to be incumbent upon them to actually connect all their providers together, or else they can't manage that risk.
And when you get to that point of talking about connecting the providers, you know, how do you see that occurring?
Well, I think if you have health systems that are integrated vertically and horizontally integrated between health systems, physician offices, ambulatory centers, rehab centers, as many of them are right now, and you begin to give them a payment for a population, let's say a population of congestive heart failure, a population of kidney failure and chronic kidney disease. Once you've given them that sort of capped dollar there, it will be definitely incumbent upon them to force them to integrate.
Yeah, and it sounds like kind of implicit in that integration is also getting full buy-in into an alignment of interests, because, you know, I think we've seen you could have a group that would at baseline seem to share a common interest and want to be going in the same direction. But as soon as you start trying to get them to work together, all, you know, divisions will arise, even if they shouldn't be.
Yeah. I mean, you probably will, but if you have a health system, or if you have a physician group that is taking on, so let's say it's a multi-specialty physician group that is beginning to take on direct contracting with a payer. If they do this, the physicians are at risk. And so that will be a big motivation, just like there is a motivation for all the other industries. And in the past, we sort of, like I said, we waited for the government to say, okay, why don't you mandate it? Or we waited for electronic medical record companies to kind of create the interoperability. But they don't have an incentive in doing that. They have an incentive of interoperating within each other, but not different organizations. But now the technology is there to actually do that. Because you're the physician office or the health system, they're the ones that are buying the electronic medical record. They can mandate whatever they need to do in terms of interoperability.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair point. You know, kind of as implicit in what you're saying is that as groups or organizations push into the new models, that's necessarily going to drag the other pieces along that might have been resisting, because if they don't play ball in that regard, of a technology tool is frankly replaceable. So right. That way, you know, if you don't have one that's helping you out, you're going to go out and find one that will.
And the consumer also, so that'll be the financial incentive for it. But then the consumer also wants a lot of convenience. They do not. So you probably, wherever your geography is right now, Matt, you probably have a choice between 2 to 3 different health systems in the area or physician multi-specialty offices. You have them. So when you do go to either one of those, any one of them, even though all of them are part of, let's say, your insurance company, but you're the one that's making the choice on which one you want to go to. And you're going to be expecting great doctors and great quality, but you're also going to be expecting service. And it's going to be a level of service that you don't have to carry information with you and your paperwork everywhere you go. So if they make it seamless for you and for your family, that will also be an impetus for them to begin to connect.
Yeah, no, I think that relates to something that a conversation I've had with one of my colleagues recently, which is it's kind of, as you were just saying, that consumer aspect to it, but it's also, how do you define consumerism? Because is it that expectation of how the service interaction is going to occur and kind of the impact or the interaction in the background as well of having your data go with you or being able to access it, since I think that's a component of it as well. Or is it kind of that shopping around piece of, having people try to find the best price on their own? I think I fall more in the camp of what you're describing, which is, if you're not having a great interaction, you're not feeling that, that you're being listened to or that you can get in front of your care team when you want to, that's going to be more likely to cause a shift, as opposed to, I'm still not sold on the pricing aspect, because I think, even with high deductible plans and more financial responsibility by the patient, it doesn't seem to have caused that much or that dramatic of a shift in behavior yet, possibly.
I 100% agree with you. I think the consumer experience probably far outweighs the potential. I think cost is a big piece, but if the cost is close enough, there's not going to be a huge delta. They're going to look for that experience and they're going to look. And remember also, they might not necessarily know the consumer whether the quality outcome is that much. So they feel the experience, and the experience is connectivity, all the data is there, everything's there for them. And it's that much easier for the service to be rendered.
Yeah. And I think it's also, as you've been saying, it's not only is it easier for the individual who's experiencing it, but it also makes it easier on the people who are providing the care. Because if they can more readily access information, they'll be able to probably be more proactive. They'll be able to identify, maybe underlying issues or other interactions that wouldn't have, been able to jump out by not having access to the data.
Correct. And that point is really important, because remember when we started this conversation, we talked about assessing risk requires a level of comprehensive. And assessing quality also requires that much. If you only have an aperture that's very small of data and you're accessing that, your decision-making ability is as good as the data that you have. And so if you are not aware that this patient did have surgery in another center for X, Y, and Z, if you are not aware of the last MRI that was done and that is not in the report, you might order another MRI. So there's a cost component, there's an inconvenience component, there's a lot. And if you're at risk, if you order that second MRI, you're not going to get reimbursed for it. And, yeah. And so, you know, and even you could think of it, the last thing I would say about this, you know, during COVID, we had a pretty significant number of patients that presented to the hospital, especially elderly people, as you know, during the last 2 years of the pandemic. And many of them did not have a full knowledge of, they were either not completely lucid or they were having difficulty breathing. They were in distress and they did not have, I think there was quite a high number where the physician didn't have access to their medical record. So the physician is actually flying blind.
Yeah, and when you're flying blind, especially in that position, it's going to,
you can have a very bad outcome. Very bad outcome.
Yeah, so believe it or not, we're already almost out of our time. So I want to pose one final question, which is, you know, what do you predict for the remainder of the year will be the biggest kind of value driver or, differentiator for enhancing utilization of value-based care?
It's hard to put one single point, and it's very, in healthcare, every time anybody makes a prediction, you multiply that prediction and that time frame by 10 and sometimes 20. We are by far one of the slowest glacial evolving industries. I could put it this way. I do believe that the healthcare industry right now is at the point where it recognizes the technology ability is there. I believe right now, healthcare executives and healthcare leaders and community leaders are aware that the technology can enable them to do this level of value-based care. So that will be, they will become educated in that. And then the movement of value will require the interdependencies between risk, quality, and payment. And that interdependency is going to drive value-based care. I don't think it's going to happen this year. I think it'll begin this year, but I think in the next definitely 3 years, we will see good strides.
Yeah, but I think that's a very fair point. It's, you know, really goes to an incremental change. But, you know, as I said, believe it or not, we're already out of time. And I want to thank my guest, Dr. Imad Rizik, for a great conversation today.
Oh, it was my pleasure, Matt, and I really appreciate it. I hope your viewership and your listeners find this valuable. And if there's any questions, just let me know.
Yeah, and I'll echo that to thank everyone listening. And also keep the dialogue going and connect with me at hashtag HCDEJURE. I'm Matt Fisher. Until next time.